but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I love a good story as much as the next person, you know, and the original Star Wars trilogy, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, you know, the classics. There's a storyline in there. There's a back and forth. Rocky, Rocky 2, Rocky 3, The Godfather, Godfather 2. There's always a good story in there. College football coaches pushing back. Transfer portal. NCAA left to approve now a recommendation from the NCAA Football Oversight Committee. They voted today to move to a January transfer window and eliminate the spring. Can I get an amen? College football coaches all over the country, amen. College football fans, amen. College football players, hold on, wait a minute. We were negotiating in the spring. You're going to take that from us? I expect there to be litigation, but the committee is proposing one transfer portal window and then making the entire month of December a recruiting dead period. You see what they're doing here? Dead period in December means that this collision of transfer transactions and coaching changes and high school football signing day and the CFP playoff and bowl games, they're trying to simplify the month of December, and they're trying to not allow athletes to transfer in the spring. We'll talk about it later on the show. This might better be referred to as the Nico, what was it, Iamalava? Is that right, Iamalava? Am I getting that right,
Iamalava.
Iamalava. The Iamalava rule. Nico, Tennessee quarterback, who in April opted to enter the portal and transfer to UCLA after his NIL contract discussions broke down with the coaching staff at Tennessee. So this is an interesting pushback. That's all I'm saying. I think it simplifies things. I also expect this is going to cause athletes to organize and go, wait a minute, we don't want to give up the portal window. That was a valuable negotiating time for us. See what happens with that. Great show for you today. Man, do we have guests. Trent Walker, wide receiver, Oregon State. He was a bright spot in Saturday's home opener against Cal. A loss for Oregon State, but Trent Walker was very good in that game. He'll be talking to us coming up here in the 3 o'clock hour. In the 4 o'clock hour, lock up, buckle up. It's locked and loaded. Pull up your socks. I don't know. Buckle up your chin strap, whatever metaphor you want to use. It'll be Will Stein, the Oregon offensive coordinator, at 4 o'clock. I'm excited to talk to him. Makes his return to this show. We've talked to Stein before on this radio program. I want to ask Stein about specifically game management from an offensive coordinator's position, from his seat. How much is he scripting? What is he? How much of it is feel? How much of it is situational? What keeps him up at night? Is there a call that, you know, maybe one of the games against Washington in the last few years, or you know, maybe a game against Ohio State? Is there a call that kind of keeps him up at night that he wishes he could have back? Will Stein will be with us right at 4 o'clock. I want you here for it. We'll also talk about Will Stein's mother. His mother's an entrepreneur. She has a company called Sissy Cakes. Look for him on Shark Tank coming soon. But Will Stein on the program, Oregon offensive coordinator, 4 o'clock. Also in the 4 o'clock hour, Jimmy Rogers will join us. Jimmy Rogers made his debut as Washington State's coach on Saturday against Idaho at home, and the Cougars looked ugly. They didn't look good. They didn't run the ball at all. Idaho manhandled them at the line of scrimmage. And still, Washington State found a way to win the football game. They rushed for 3 yards in the game. And 3 rushing yards against an FCS opponent. But they won the game. And now he is playing, hosting a game against San Diego State on Saturday. So it'll be Trent Walker, Oregon State. They've got a game against Fresno State at Research Stadium Saturday, 12:30. Will Stein, they've got a game against Oklahoma State, 12:30. Autzen Stadium, look out for the traffic on I-5. And then it'll be Jimmy Rogers coming up in the 4 o'clock hour to kind of cap things off. We'll be leaving you early today, Heads Up Affiliates. This show will end right around 5:11 because we've got NFL football right here on 750 The Game. NFL season starting with a Thursday night game. Steven, you excited about the NFL kicking off?
Yeah, I mean, how can you not be, John? I mean, it's more and more sports that are entertaining to football. And, yeah, I mean, it seems always weird that, you know, I think tomorrow is the day that I'm kind of like, what are we doing on a Friday in Brazil? But Thursday, Thursday, I get it. Like, you know, the Eagles win the championship, kind of get the day to themselves, celebrate their Super Bowl win, connect last season to this season. So, yeah, I'm down with the Thursday game. Friday game I got a little problem with, but Thursday game I'm down with.
I am excited to see the Dallas Cowboys and the Eagles play. And we've watched college football in week 0 and week 1. It was sloppy. Will the NFL be as sloppy? Because I'm just curious. Like, or will it be more buttoned down because, hey, these guys are the pros?
It seems like there's always a little sloppiness in the first couple weeks of the NFL season. So, yeah, I think we'll see a little sloppiness. Probably not as much as we do in college football because they are professionals and they're not, you know, 20-year-old kids running out there and making their first start in a couple of years. You know, since high school, a lot of these guys hadn't started since high school for a couple of years, and now they're going out there starting and, you know, in front of big, giant crowds. So, you know, NFL is always a little bit better if you're going to talk about on-field play, but there will be a little sloppiness.
I think I'm eager to see it. And I'm eager to see, well, you know, and I want to dive into some of these games right off the top of the show. These college games that are coming up this weekend, I'm eager to see whether or not Oregon State can piece it back together. Oregon State did not look good in the season opener. They were embarrassing, and they were unprepared. They were sloppy. They looked disorganized. I still, Steven, want to believe in him. I want to believe that, hey, it was just a sloppy opener, and here they come. But what are we doing with Oregon State against Fresno State in this week 2 game? Do you trust Oregon State enough to pick them? Because I am going to pick them to beat Fresno State because I watched Fresno State a little bit. Fresno State, you know, got beat by Kansas pretty badly, 31-7 in their week 0 game, and then came back and beat Georgia Southern 42-14. I don't think Georgia Southern's very good, but they're going to Oregon State here in their third game of the season. I'm blindly trusting that Trent Bray and the coaching staff, they're going to figure out the substitution issues, that Malik Murphy in the running game and the passing game at Oregon State are going to be a little better, and I'm blindly trusting that. I don't feel great about it, but I'm picking Oregon State to beat Fresno State. How about you?
I'm going to pick Oregon State as well, but I have the same issues that you do. It was so bad in week 1, and we had expectations going into the game that Oregon State would be able to compete with Cal, but it certainly looked like a Power 4 team versus a Group 5 team. And that's what scares me, John, is that maybe we just had high expectations and we're thinking of Oregon State back in 2019, of how they could compete in the Pac-12. We're a long way off from when that was in 2021 and all those types of years. Like, we're a long way away from those competitive teams, so maybe we just have to temper our expectations and realize, look, this is a Group of 5 team, and now you're playing against Fresno State, who's in your same conference, and it should be a good game. But I'm going to put enough faith in Trent Bray to figure this out. You know, sometimes we see really big jumps from week 1 to week 2. I'm picking the Beavs. I'm really glad I don't have to bet my life on it because I would not be feeling comfortable either way.
I wouldn't put money on this.
No,
but I'll put a little bit of my credibility on it. Oregon State's a 3-point favorite. I'm going to pick them. I'm going to pick them to cover because why not? If you're betting on them, bet all the way. But I liked what Trent Bray said yesterday, but I haven't seen it. And it's really hard to get that recency bias out of your mind, good and bad. It's why in the NBA playoffs, when you have a 7-game series, the team that wins game 1, you go, oh my gosh, they're going to sweep. They're going all the way. And then what happens? They split the first 2 games, and you go, wait a minute, I'm confused by this. I kind of think we'll see a different Oregon State team. I'm banking that they will make the improvements. Meanwhile, Oregon's got Oklahoma State at home. This game also at 12:30. Again, watch the traffic on I-5. Get out there early if you're going to either one of these games. This game will be on CBS on Saturday. Mike Gundy, I feel like he should have not poked the bear, let Oregon just kind of take a nap in this game, because I think Oregon might have looked a little ahead. Oregon's got Penn State on the 27th. You know, there's just some things. There's some areas where Oregon's players might have looked ahead, but Mike Gundy started counting money, looked over at Oregon and said, you know what, resources, this is terrible. We don't have the resources they do. Oregon is a 28.5-point favorite. I kind of think they're going to cover it. I think Gundy will try to throw the ball all over the stadium, and I don't think he's going to have a lot of success against Oregon. I think this one's going to get ugly. How about you?
Yeah, I think it's going to get ugly, too. We saw what happened with a 28.5-point spread last week with Oregon and Montana State. Well, now we're getting the same thing. That kind of shows you how down Oklahoma State is in this game. Certain Zane Flores, the redshirt freshman, that's not going to be we talked about young quarterbacks going in and sloppy play, going into a start at Autzen Stadium where the crowd is going to remember what Mike Gundy said. I'm with you. I think Oregon rolls in this one and does cover.
One game that jumps off the board at me, and we're not going to do all the games, but if you want all my picks, you can go to johnconzano.com. But, you know, UNLV has played twice. They played Idaho State, and they played Sam Houston. And I watched UNLV because I'm really curious to see, like, can UNLV win the Mountain West? You know, they've got a new coach in Dan Mullins, and they are, you know, but they're still UNLV, and this is a team that, you know, the Pac-12 has talked a lot about. And so I've kind of just watched UNLV for a little while, wondering how good they can be this season. They've, you know, they played two games, they're 2-0, but UCLA, meanwhile, had this really bad performance against UCLA, and Deshaun Foster foolishly said we were close after losing 43-10. That's not close, coach. Should not have said that. The remark is not going over well with fans. Still, UCLA is a favorite on the road in this game, and I have them barely covering. I have it 31-27 UCLA, but again, a little bit of blind faith in the Bruins, and I don't like that.
I agree. I think UCLA wins this game. I don't think UNLV is very good. I think that they played an Idaho State team that's not very good, and they barely lucked out to win that game, John. They were +3 in turnovers to beat an Idaho State team that is, you know, middle of the pack in the Big Sky. And then you go and you play Sam Houston State, who lost their coach, the Temple. They lost a lot of their players on defense, which is what they were strong at. I think UNLV isn't very good. I think they're very fraudulent. I don't agree with Deshaun Foster that they were close. I also think Utah is just really good. We talked about this. Is Cal really good or is Oregon State stink? I think you say the same thing about Utah, UCLA. I think Utah is just really good. I think Utah is a top 10 team. And so I do think Nico Iamaliava is the best player on the field, and he's going to show out in that game. I don't think the loss was on him against Utah. I thought he played fine. He didn't have a lot of help around him, and Utah just outmanned him. And it was
I think Utah is pretty darn good.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Is I think UCLA, like, they weren't close to beating Utah, but they're not as bad as that number is because Utah's just so good. So I think when they play a team like UNLV, they can kind of out-talent them. And Nico, I think, is the best player on the field. So give me UCLA.
Yeah. There are some games on the board that, you know, are mismatches. That week two is kind of going to – I think we're going to see some ugly numbers out there. Two games I want to talk about are bounce-back games. Eastern Washington of the Big Sky Conference is going to Boise State. This is a Friday night game on ESPN, 6 o'clock. Boise State, I looked at the metrics from the loss. They had the best metrics of any losing team in the country in week one. They outgained their opponent. They had more first downs, 25-15 against South Florida, but lost, and lost in a blowout fashion. It's inexplicable except for the three turnovers and a special teams touchdown on a fake punt. So it's really like four changes of possession that South Florida benefited from. I think Boise State's going to get back on the horse here. They're favored by 28.5. Will not be surprised if they win like 49-7, something like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think Boise State was very unlucky in that first game against South Florida. Yeah, they shouldn't have won. The fake punt really was the nail in the coffin on that play. Boise State drove the ball down the field numerous times, John. They just couldn't finish in the red zone. Against Eastern Washington, they'll be able to do that. And I do think that they figure it out by the end of the season or into the middle of the season of how they're going to score without Ashton Jensen. I think that was a real shock to their whole entire culture of how important he really was. So I'm with you. I think Boise State rolls. I think Boise State's still the favorite in the Mountain West and is probably going to roll through that conference undefeated. I still have a lot of faith in Boise. If they finish 10-2, I don't know that they make the playoff, but they'd be right on the door knocking if they can compete against Notre Dame.
Well, I think it depends what South Florida does, right? I mean, if South Florida ends up being pretty good in you know, being a team that contends also for a playoff spot, that loss won't look as bad. I also think, you know, Boise State's got some brand awareness, and if they're sitting there at, like, you know, 11-1, 10-2, and again, they go to Notre Dame, they go to South Bend here in several weeks. If they can go to South Bend and play respectably in that game, or let's just say they win that game, I think that South Florida loss evaporates as everybody watches that. Another game that I expect a bounce back in is San Jose State at Texas. This is the Arch Manning restoration game. Steve Sarkisian is going to feed his quarterback and try to end the narratives. San Jose State, not very good on offense, only managed 14 points against Central Michigan last week. The spread is 36.5, Texas favored, of course. I kind of think it's like 52-9. Like, I don't know if San Jose State gets a touchdown. I think they get maybe two or three field goals in this game. But I have it like 52-9 because I cannot imagine San Jose State's receivers getting any kind of separation against the Texas defensive backs.
Yeah, the Texas defense is the best unit for on the field by far. I don't think that's even close. And so I don't know how San Jose scores. I will say this. I don't know what they're going to do with Arch Manning. Like, are they going to try to throw the ball down the field? Because he didn't do it against Ohio State. I'm sure he can do it against San Jose State because his guys are going to be wide open. So I'm with you. Maybe Sark does try to open it up a little bit. But I don't know that they're necessarily going to just put it on them just at that level. I don't. It's going to be a dominant win. It's going to be a 35-point win. But I don't know how impressive it really is going to be because we saw what Arch Manning did against Ohio State, and that was nothing. So, yeah, I think Texas is going to win. I think they're going to win big. But it's not going to change my opinion on anything. I saw Arch Manning against a really good defense. It did not look good. It's not going to change my opinion on anything about Texas, but they do win big in this one.
I want to talk about another game that's interesting. How about Arizona State? They go to Mississippi State. Both of these teams are 1-0. Saturday, 4:30, ESPN2. Kenny Dillingham, he is, you know, he's the ultimate underdog coach at the ultimate underdog school. Except Arizona State is not an underdog in this game. They're favored on the road against an SEC opponent. They are a 6.5-point favorite. This is a different position for Arizona State to be in. This is a different spot as they go to Mississippi State. I think Arizona State could win this game, but if they do, I think it's a really close game. I think this is super dicey for me. I kind of picked it like 28-27, kind of one of those fun games. It goes down to the end. Do they find a way? Do they not find a way? But this is a different animal and a different position for Kenny Dillingham's program, Stephen.
It is, and I actually think I'm opposite of you. I think Mississippi State wins this game outright. And I don't – Blake Chapin, the quarterback, he had a nice game. But Mississippi State went on the road at Southern Miss in week one, John. And Southern Miss, they were a terrible team a season ago, but they got the Marshall coach. They got basically all the Marshall players who won the Conference USA last season. So that's not a terrible team. And they went and dominated that game. Jeff Lebby, the head coach at Mississippi State, used to be at Oklahoma as the OC. He has that offense rolling a little bit. He has guys that look like SEC players. And so I'm interested to see how they look against a team like Arizona State, who looked fine against Northern Arizona, but wasn't like anything out of the ordinary. I do think that Mississippi State has some athletes, and that place is going to be rocking with the cowbell. I think that's a tough place to play, tough environment. I do think Mississippi State actually gets this win and moves to 2-0. Arizona State falls to 1-1.
I have it 28-27, so you can see where I stand. I'm like, maybe. Here's another one I want to talk about. Stanford and BYU. Daunting task for Stanford. Stanford is very limited in what they can do in the pass game. They are up against a team that is defensively talented and playing at home. BYU... I look at BYU, and as I tried to handicap this game, I just went back to last season, and I said, okay, I know the players are a little different, I know the team's a little different, but the circumstances here are the same. Arizona came into Provo last year a lot in the same way that Stanford did, very limited, you know, new coach, there's been a lot of turnover, and they lost 41-19. Houston came in, similar circumstances, lost 30-18. Very similar talent deficits, very similar circumstances, both games in Provo. The trend is your friend. Stanford cannot score. They're having trouble scoring. I think BYU will be too much for them. I think BYU, they're favored by 20.5. I think they're going to cover that. I think it's like 38-13 BYU.
I think BYU wins. I think they win big, but I think Stanford actually covers the number and gets within the 20.5. Stanford can run the football. They did that against Hawaii. They can't throw the football with Ben Gilbranson. We know that. But they can run the football. They're going to slow the game down. And that's what they did against Hawaii. And then they made the mistake of trying to put it in Gilbranson's hands with the play action pass late in the game. Through an interception, they lose. I don't trust Frank Reich as a coach. I don't trust Stanford as a team, but I do trust that run game where you get Bear Bachmeyer, true freshman. Stanford's defense is going to be better than what they saw against Portland State. I think it's a little bit of a slog. It's a little bit of a slower game, and so less possessions. I'm going to take 20.5 points. It's a lot of points to cover, so give me Stanford plus 20.5.
Trent Walker coming up, Oregon State wide receiver, in an interview brought to you by Jamba, because life is better blended. We'll talk to Trent Walker about Oregon State's potential bounce back this week. They've got a home game against Fresno State on 12:30 on Saturday. Stick around. Hey, it's Canzano for Gresham Ford. You hear me talk about the culture at Gresham Ford. I'm really talking about Bess Wills and her son, Preston. They do a fantastic job in making their employees feel like family and making their customers feel like family. I've heard it over and over again. Man, that place is really different. You walk onto the car lot, it's really friendly. It's low pressure. They're not, you know, I've heard that over and over, and I've experienced it myself. Experience it for yourself. Get out to Gresham Ford. They are on Powell Boulevard in Gresham. Go online to GreshamFord.com. Check out all of their new vehicles. If you want to schedule a service, the Quick Lane is right on site there at Gresham Ford as well. But, yes, get yourself into the new Ford Maverick or a Ford Ranger or a Ford F-150. Check out a Ford Escape or a Ford Bronco or a Bronco Sport or the classic Mustang. They've got electric, they've got hybrid, but best of all, they'll treat you right. GreshamFord.com, Gresham Ford. They're the dealer with a heart.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Nice warm day. Perfect for a Jamba. Get yourself out to your local Jamba location. Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver. I think he said orange creamsicle, Stephen, last week was his favorite. I went and tried it. It's good. It's really good. It's like that orange creamsicle popsicle you had as a kid. Trent Walker, how you doing, man?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I got to tell you, I thought you played really well on Saturday, and I know you think of it as a team sport. I thought you played well. You had a good game. It didn't go as you guys hoped it would, though, did it?
No, and I appreciate you saying I played well. I mean, statistically, I played well, but to be honest, that was probably one of my worst games in terms of, like, film, if you really break it down. So I think that's kind of the theme of Saturday, was just a bunch of dudes not executing, myself included. I think we're way better than that.
I know that, you know, as the game's unfolding, there's some frustration. Give us an idea. When you look at the film later, did you feel better after watching the film, or did you feel worse after watching the film, or what did you feel?
I think I felt worse because it was just like, damn, if we just did this, if we just did that, it was little things here and there that we need to clean up and that we should have never been a thing in the first place.
When you look back at the game itself, there, you know, there were some struggles in the run game. I know that has to be a point of emphasis this week. And, you know, I think these things are fixable, too. You see offensive lines come together. But what did it feel like for you to be on the field amid all of that happening?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really ever feel like we were out of the game until, like, late in that fourth quarter. But I think on the sideline, like, we were all still optimistic. We have the iPads on the sidelines. Like, we were seeing the mistakes we were making. And I don't want to say they're easy fixes, but, like, for me, example, like, I just wasn't using the right technique when I was blocking. Like, and it was sloppy. And, like, for example, the fumble in the 2 minute, I told Bryce right after that happened that that was 100% on me because it was my guy that ended up blowing him up when he was in a weird position. So it's just stuff like that. It's when you're one-on-ones, it's get your job done. You don't need to be a hero.
Trent Walker with us. Oregon State will play Fresno State Saturday, Research Stadium, 12:30. You caught 9 passes for 136 yards. You were also back there as a punt returner. What's that like with the balls in the air and you're back there as a punt returner?
Yeah, it's a weird feeling. For me, I feel completely isolated back there. It kind of goes quiet. I like to take a moment when I'm back there, and I do a quick little prayer to God just to remind myself of like where I am, being in the moment. A lot of people think it's scary. I mean, it's really not that scary because you have all the control in the world just with the wave of your arms to let dudes know they can't touch you. But I mean, it's one of the most pressure filled positions. You try to make the right decision, and like you guys saw, sometimes they just get a good bounce.
The guys that are running at you, we don't see it on TV, you don't see it in the press box, but are they talking to you as they're running or trying to distract you, or is it really quiet when the ball's in the air?
It's far from quiet when they're near. They're talking a lot of crap. Some of the dudes yell ball, like me, like we're in baseball or something. Like that'll throw me off. I don't know. It's a lot of chit chat when they're running downfield.
We are talking to Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver. What area can the offense as a whole get better at, Trent?
I think it just comes down to executing. I think Gundy actually called a great game, and we just didn't execute. Like I talked about, I didn't block very well. I don't want to say easy fixes, but it's just about doing your job and winning your one-on-ones and executing at the highest level that we have been during camp and during game prep.
The coaching staff was frustrated. You could see it, at halftime. Did they let you hear it, or was the locker room kind of calm and poised?
I wouldn't describe it as calm as and poised, but it definitely got a little emotional in the locker room.
I am eager to see this week. What do you see on film when you look at Fresno State?
Yeah, I think Fresno's always been a school that plays hard. And one point emphasis is special teams. I think they take good pride in special teams. And when you turn on their tape, you could see that they play hard, and we got to come with an edge. We got to bring our best shit. But at the same time, I feel like we're the better team. But they could, you never know.
I am, I look at this and I go, it's easy for me to say, hey, this is a game you should win. This is a must win. You got to win this game. But you're out there and you have to play the game, you have to do the little things. When coaches say, hey, we got to do the little things right, what are they talking about?
Yeah, that started all the way back in, like, summer training. One quote we talked about is how you do anything is how you do everything. Little things like cleaning up the locker room, like that's one of the little things we talk about. But in terms of, like, football, it's like where you – for receivers is where you split – yourself for a play on a certain route. You could be split too far wide, and now that curl window against the zone is being taken away because you just splitted a yard outside further than you're supposed to. I think it just comes down to executing like we know we can.
I mentioned Jamba off the top. Have you hit your local Jamba recently, or what are you drinking now?
Yeah, I go to Jamba probably once a week. It might go up here soon, but I know when we travel to away games, we get a big Jamba right before we get on the plane. So I'm still drinking the Orange Dream Machine. It tasted like an orange creamsicle, like you were talking about.
Yeah, I need you to throw us a few more suggestions, because I'm just going to follow what you do. So you get one. You get one when you get on the plane, like when you're outbound or when you're coming back home or both?
It's usually right on the tarmac, like right as you walk onto the plane. You get a little, usually a sandwich, some pretzels, and then a jamba.
That's pretty good. That's not bad. How is that travel? You get on that plane. Is it assigned seating? Do you know where you're sitting, or is it open? Is it like a Southwest flight? Like, how do you guys decide where people are sitting?
It's assigned seating. It's real nice. It's low stress. They do a great job just getting us from point A to point B. And, yeah, I have no complaints about our travel.
I am looking forward to seeing you guys on Saturday at Research Stadium. I'll say hi to you on the field. But anything we should be looking for? I mean, you don't have to give away the game plan, but, you know, you guys must talk amongst yourselves about wanting to come back and play better in this second game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, like, point anything out specific. I think we're going to come Saturday with a little bit more of an edge. That was the theme. I think we're going to have a little bit more attitude, play with a little more heart. I think we were last Saturday, but I think there's always room for improvement in that area. Coach Bray's always talking about control, the things you can control, like effort and your attitude. So I think I'm excited for Saturday. I was excited for last Saturday. I think we got a good one ahead of us.
All right, go get after it, Trent Walker. Appreciate you joining us every week. Thank you, man.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on.
You bet. There he goes, Oregon State wide receiver. Steven, he had a good game. He caught 9 balls, had more than 100 yards receiving. He's back there. He's their playmaker on offense. We got the guy. And he's getting a jamba while he's getting on the plane. Life is good. Life is better, blended, all that. But they need to win. Oregon State needs to go perform well and win this game.
Can you imagine having 9 catches and being like the only good player on offense, and then, you know, you tell him good job, and then you say this to him?
I appreciate you saying I played well. I mean, statistically, I played well, but to be honest, that was probably one of my worst games in terms of, like, film, if you really break it down.
Worst games ever? Like, that was one of his worst games ever. He had 9 catches. He was, like, the one offensive guy. The next highest was 2. Like, I think that's awesome out of Trent Walker. Like, shows his leadership of what he is for this Beaver team. And he was awesome. Like, I thought he was really good getting open. He was the one guy that was getting open. And we expect a big season out of him. But just, it was shocking when he said that to me. I just couldn't believe it. Just there's a lot of leadership. Yeah.
Walk-on player. He's their best offensive player right now. I mean, he was last season. He was their most consistent playmaker last season.
It's Mike Haslake.
Yes, and he's got a, there's an element to his game that is gritty, but there's a reliability and a business-like approach that he has on the field that I really like. Like, he's out there, he plays well. You can tell the coaching staff's trying to get him the ball. You can tell they trust him. They don't put you back there as the punt return guy if they don't trust you. You know, and I gotta be honest with you. Like, okay, so when I was in community college playing junior college football in California, I returned punts for my team, for De Anza College. When the ball's in the air, Steven, he's like, I can't imagine doing it at Research Stadium or Autzen Stadium or in one of those Big Ten stadiums where it just goes quiet all of a sudden. But I can tell you, when the ball's in the air, the guys running at you, they're not being quiet. And it is a exercise in concentration. And he's talking about how the guys are saying ball or I got it. They're just trying to get him to get off his game, whatever, in any way they can, so that he bobbles it or drops it.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like one of the more terrifying things, where you just have to take your eyes off of everybody else, knowing they're just trying to just completely decapitate you while you have to make that catch. I did find this interesting, John. Also, he talked about they seem like they are very comfortable with what happened on Saturday, and that it's all just mental mistakes, and it's fixable mistakes. Does that give you more confidence going into this Fresno State game? Because Trent Bray said the same thing. Trent Bray said, look, like, yeah, we deserve to lose that game, but the mistakes we made are fixable. Trent Walker says the same thing. Are you buying that, or do you think that's just trying to spin it positively?
I don't know how else you deal with it, because in your mind, you have to put it behind you, and you have to approach week 2 like it's an independent event. And so I think the best way to put that behind you is to kind of look at week 1 and go, hey, that wasn't us. You know, that's not who we are. Because if you say it's who you are, this is just going to be how it is throughout the season. And so And I do tend to agree with Trent Bray and Trent Walker because I expected more from Oregon State, you know, and maybe I was wrong in my estimation of them, but they're going to be like, you know, the old saying is you are who your record is at the end of the season. You know, we're going to find out here in short order as we get a little sample size. I don't think that they can win in week three and week four against Texas Tech and Oregon. I have questions about week five against Houston, and then they get Washington State twice. I think they can beat Washington State twice. They have Appalachian State. They've got some real winnable games down the stretch, but they have to get this one. They cannot start 0-4 because if they start 0-4, there's the possibility of being 0-5 out there. And if you can win this one game, you change the early trajectory of your season. This is a very important game. And I think it's an important game for Trent Bray, the head coach, because if he doesn't get this one, there's a potential that the locker room wobbles a little bit and the fan base turns on him. So keep an eye out there. Our big splash is coming up, 4 o'clock hours loaded. Will Stein at 4, Jimmy Rogers in the 4 o'clock hour. We got a lot for you here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Will Stein, Oregon offensive coordinator, coming up top of the hour. Should be a great interview. Interested to talk to him about the play calling. Dante Moore. Like, does Will Stein... I know you're trying to win the game. You're trying to get first downs and touchdowns as an offensive coordinator, but... is there a part of Will Stein that will throw something at his quarterback that maybe the quarterback isn't ready for? Like, Steven, you know what I mean? Like, you know, let's see if he can handle this situation. Do you think there's any part of Will Stein that he does that during a game? Let's see how a guy can handle it. I know they do it in practice. They'll do it in a scrimmage, but... will they do it in a game situation?
I think so, yeah. I think you got to push your guys to see what they can and cannot do, and I think these are the perfect opportunities to do it against teams like Montana State and Oklahoma
right
State.
Now.
Where because if you make a mistake, let's say in worst-case scenario, you know, he fumbles or he throws an interception, turns it over, you're probably going to get another opportunity to get that back, and you're probably still not going to lose the game, where if you do it at Penn State and that's the first time you try it and it's a mistake, well, that's really going to kill you. But if you are pushing the issue and you're pushing the play calling and you're pushing, you know, just the mental ability of Dante Moore on the field against these teams and it works, well, then you got something in your back pocket later on the season. So, yeah, I think Will Stein's all about that.
Well, we'll see. I'll ask him about it coming up here at 4 o'clock. I'm also going to talk to Jimmy Rogers in the 4 o'clock hour, Washington State coach. He's 1-0. People are calling for his head because it didn't look pretty. He's pretty no-nonsense. First time we had him on, I got to be honest with you, I kind of thought, gosh, he's really no-nonsense. Doesn't sound like it's a lot of fun. Does that work in this era? Because Trent Bray's got a little bit of that intensity to him too, Steven. And we're in an era where the players are empowered. The players can get in the portal. The players can go get NIL deals. Does it work to have a guy who's that intense, who's, you know, sort of on your sideline with you or calling the plays or is your head coach? Can you have that mentality? Or do you need to be loose and free and having fun? You're playing a game, for crying out loud.
I think it works when you win. It sounds kind of dumb, but I think as long as you're winning, guys will buy in. But it's one of those things where I think if you start losing and then you're still no nonsense and you're getting after everybody, and in this era with the transfer portal, all that kind of stuff, guys are going to leave. And so I do think it's one of those things where, like, it would work with a Nick Saban. Like, Nick Saban can get after people and because they're winning championships. They're getting to the college football playoff.
Mm.
But if you're Trent Bray and you lose to Fresno State and then you lose to Texas Tech and you lose to Oregon, you're 0-4 facing off against Houston, does the message still stand as it did in week one?
Mm.
And I do wonder that in this day and age of college football, because guys will be able to leave. There will be whispers. I'm sure, you know, different scouts from different schools will be getting in players' ears and say, hey, look, like, want to come to a team that, is actually really good. And, you know, think about it at the end of the season. And so I do wonder about those type of coaches nowadays in college football, how effective it can be just year in and year out. I think in certain seasons, yeah, it works great. And I think that's the best kind of coach. But, man, sometimes it doesn't work that way.
Sometimes we'll see. We'll see if the mentality of Jimmy Rogers connects with his players and Trent Bray as well. That brings us to our big splash. It is the one thing you need to know.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be
the big splash.
Well, Amari Cooper, five-time Pro Bowl selection, has informed the Las Vegas Raiders that he intends to retire. Just days before the team opens the season at New England, Chip Kelly said Cooper called Pete Carroll in the morning to say he was done. It's unfortunate, Kelly said, because I think he's a heck of a football player, but he knows in his heart what he wants to do, so I wish him the best. Cooper's decision comes after he signed a one-year deal with the Raiders. On August 26th, he said, returning to the Raiders who drafted him in 2015 was a full circle moment, that he had some juice left. He got into training. He got some reps. But, you know, the Raiders, who will have to make a 48-man game day roster decision on Saturday, say there's no hard feelings here about this. Cooper just, his heart's not in it, Steven, and he's just saying, I'm just going to go. And I'm not going to play to finish.
Why did he sign a contract like 10, 12 days ago then? Like,
I don't know.
Like you had that itch to play still. You say you had juice left, and then 12 days later, you're like, I'm done. Like, I don't know. I just feel like that's kind of a weird flip-flopping situation. Puts the Raiders in a bad spot as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you read anything about it, they were kind of relying on him to be one of those veteran presences for their quarterback and Geno Smith. But, I mean, good for him. Like, if his heart's not in it, I don't want him to play, especially a game like football, where I feel like you do have to have everything. You have to be 100% in. You can't be partially in. You got to be all in to play that sport. But
this is
just a weird situation.
Not the hokey pokey.
Just 12 days ago, though, you're like, I'm going to sign a one-year contract here. It just seems like weird timing.
Meanwhile, Mike Gundy, Oklahoma State coach, is clarifying his comments that he made about Oregon. I want you to hear this.
You know, a little bit of that was taken out of context. You know, the truth of the matter, Rick, is I was being very complimentary of Oregon and their commitment. The other things that had been said that day were that they've made a huge commitment to facilities, as we know. They've made a huge commitment to their staff. They've made a huge commitment to their surrounding staff. And then they've made a huge NIL commitment. And the thing that people have to understand is I'm very, very appreciative of what we've done here at Oklahoma State. Our administration is trying and doing everything they can to facilitate us in the NIL window.
There he goes. What's Gundy doing here, Stephen? He comes out and says, you know, we don't have the money. Now he's saying, wait a minute, it was out of context. I played the full question and answer to Gundy's thing. I don't think he had anything to apologize for. I also think it probably wasn't smart because you're poking the bear in front of a game against the bear.
Well, I think people took it as he was calling out Oregon for bending the rules or like playing unfair, when in actuality he wasn't. He was just saying, look, Oregon spends a lot of money. Like, that's a known fact. And I don't think he actually was calling out Oregon, but a lot of Oregon fans took it wrong and took it in a way where I think he's now looking at Saturday and thinking, man, these fans are going to be all over my team and my players. Let's back off a little bit. I love you guys, Duck fans. Duck fans, I love you. Don't get after me on Saturday. But I don't even think I'm with you. He had nothing to apologize for. I thought he spoke the truth in his first comment. And now he's just kind of saying, look, I actually am a little jealous of what Oregon does. I would love to have all that money.
I think, he'd love to have the resources. Doesn't have the resources, but I think Oregon's going to absolutely whack Oklahoma State on Saturday. I have it like, 50 to 10, something like that. But I just don't see this being much of a game on Saturday. And I hope Oregon gets some good reps out of it. I'll ask Will Stein what he sees with Oklahoma State on film. He's coming up next, of course, right here on this show. We get the big guest on the Bald Faced Truth. Look, we got Trent Bray on yesterday's show. It'll be Will Stein, the Oregon offensive coordinator, coming up here in a few minutes. Later in the 4 o'clock hour, it'll be Jimmy Rogers. I'm excited to talk to Jimmy Rogers about it. We got Sean Lewis next week. Tomorrow, Stu Jackson, the WCC commissioner. We'll always get the best guests here, the biggest guests. They know they want to come on the show. I want them on the show. I, of course, am interested in hearing from them and talking with them, but should be a lot of fun to see to hear from Will Stein. By the way, Will Stein's mother, she owns a cake company. Like, we surprised him the first time we had him on the show last year or whatever it was. We surprised him by pointing out, hey, let's talk about your mother in this cake company. Sissycakes.com is the cake company. I'm going to ask Will Stein how that business is going. He was so excited to be like, hey, I get to plug my mom's business on your show. Let's do it. And I think we should just get his mom on the show to talk about Sissycakes. What are we what are we doing? What are, you know, let's go to the horse. We want to talk about this stuff. But we'll talk cakes and we'll talk football with Will Stein coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. And then Stephen will have the 5 at 5, the 5 biggest stories going on in sports. And then we're going to go right into our Thursday night football game as the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles will be playing a football game and a football game that counts. Great quote today coming out of Micah Parsons' camp. Did you hear what his agent said? Stephen, Micah Parsons going to the Green Bay Packers from the Cowboys, got the money. His agent said his job is to chase quarterbacks. Our job is to go out and chase commas for him. So they got him that big deal.
That's the type of agent you want right there.
He got him the money. And so, you know, Micah Parsons will be out doing his thing on the football field, but for the Packers this weekend, potentially, because the Packers are also talking about not wanting to put him in a bad situation, not want to ask too much of him too soon. But I think people are expecting to see Parsons out there. He says he's ramped up and he's ready, and he says it's up to the Packers how much he plays in Sunday's season opener against the Detroit Lions. He passed his physical, but you know, he had a back thing going on. I think you got to be careful if you're the Packers because you want to protect your investment here, and you want to make sure that he's going to be okay. Parsons new to the Packers, but not new to the NFC rivalries. And so he gets Dallas and Detroit. You know, it's kind of like a Thanksgiving Day thing coming here in September. All right, Will Stein, Oregon offensive coordinator. This should be a really good interview coming up. I hope you stick around for it. If you have a Duck fan who's a friend, good time to send a text saying, hey, get yourself over to the Bald-Faced Truth because Will Stein's about to talk. Engaging guy, interesting guy. We're going to joust coming up.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the Bald-Faced Truth.
Oregon put up 59 points in the season-opening victory over Montana State. Offense was very good. A whole bunch of players got to play. Looked like it would be a lot of fun to call that game if you were an offensive coordinator because you get to kind of do some things maybe without the stress of being in a tight game. But, you know, I've often talked with coaches who say, you know, sometimes those are the harder games to call because, you know, you're trying to get your guys in position to succeed or trying to set something up or maybe work on something during a game. But I'm really curious on Will Stein, the Oregon offensive coordinator's approach. He is joining us here in a moment, and I'm going to ask him about his approach to the game, play calling, what that rhythm is like, what it feels like when you only get, like, you know, a dozen of these or 14 of these in a season as a play caller. Yeah, you can do it in practice. You can do it in scrimmage. But it's different when you're in a game situation. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is a game situation. Will Stein, Oregon offensive coordinator, joining us fresh off the practice field. Hey, Will. How you doing, man?
Good, too.
Good. I'm really good. Kids are back in school, man. How are things in your household?
I got a two and almost 3-year-old who's learning how to get potty trained, and then I have a 1-year-old who is finding her voice. So yeah, things are
I you know what? That's right. I think there's some biology there. It's they're just old enough now where you're forgetting how hard it was when they were a newborn. So otherwise, no one would have multiple kids. Like you would go, that's the hardest thing I've ever done. So it's good age.
No doubt. Bless my wife. She's at home with them all the time, and I get to coach football, but yeah, whenever I go home, I just try to be there, be present, do whatever she needs me to do.
I want to ask you about calling a game. There, you know, there's a rhythm and a flow to calling a game. How did it feel to be back in the box? Because, you know, I know you only get 12 or 15 of those times a year, but how did that feel to be calling plays?
I mean, it's awesome. There's nothing like it. It's it's just a blessing that I'm able to do it and do it at a place like Oregon with great players and great coaches around me. And, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. And when you prepare like we do as coaches, players, it makes the game simpler, but there's always things that comes up, you know, during a game that you got to adapt and change and fix. But all in all, it was great to get back out there.
Help us with that, because most people will never be in that position, but we all play strategy games. But how much of what you're doing up there as you're calling plays, like how far ahead in the game are you? Is it play to play, situation to situation? Or are you thinking, you know, are you thinking as each series as sort of its own subset? How do you sort of approach that?
It's really just a one play focus. It's what do I need to do on this play to give our guys the absolute best call possible for them to be the most successful that they can. So, you know, when you have to call plays, you have to break it down segments, normal downs, first and 10, second and 1-6. You have all schedules, second and 7+. You got third and 1, third and 2-3, third and 4-6, third and 7-10, third and 11+. You got red area. You got a fringe area. You have high red, mid red, low red. You got goal line, short yardage calls. So you have all these situations that you are preparing for all week long, hours on end, practicing, making sure that our guys know exactly the calls that are going to come in and the defenses that we're expecting, and then being able to coach them up on what if they don't give us this? What is the second look that they have? What is maybe the third look that they have? What is something that maybe they showed on tape 3 years ago that we know about that we have to just prepare them for? And 99% of the times, you don't even get those looks, but you have to play the percentages and you have to play, like you said, the strategy of the what ifs. And to me, there's 70 plays in a game on average. We averaged 68.5 last year. Let's say there's 10 plays where the defense has a better call than us. There's 10 plays where we have a better call than the defense. And then there's 50 plays that are cover three versus inside zone or cover four versus four verts. So how do we as an offense get our quarterbacks, get our players during those 10 negative plays that are on to get them out of that play with either a check, a protection check, a run check, to get those more into that 50 category or the 10 that we have good. So that's where you can create some explosives. You can create some contingency plans to where, hey, like we got a bad call on, they got a better call than we do. Like, let's get out of it. Like the Dante Moore third down and 14 when they had zero pressure from the field and we slid the protection and then threw an angle route. Like they had a better call on than us originally. Then we got out of that. We checked the protection, checked the route, and hit an explosive. So that is the goal as a play caller, is to get your players to know exactly how to get out of bad plays.
You mentioned the 68.5. Chip Kelly, I think, talked about this last year that, you know, he was a guy that liked to play fast. And then all of a sudden last season, they really slowed it down. And they said later, hey, we were trying to manage snap counts for guys. We thought it would be a long year with the playoff and all that. Have you guys adjusted at all? You know, how fast you want to play, tempo?
No, we stay the same, but the game has changed. I mean, when Chip was here, there was no substitution rules on offense. Mm-hmm. There was no clock stoppages. I mean, there was clock stoppages in between first downs. Like, you know, now the clock rolls more in football. If the ball goes out anywhere near the ticks on our sideline, the refs stand over the ball and allow substitutions from the defense. So the game is different. The rules are different. So what's going to happen? Like, there's going to be less plays. Yeah. So, I mean, you look at the average plays from us last year was 68.5. Ohio State was a little lower. Our league's a little bit slower by nature because more teams huddle, more teams play more traditional pro style. But we're going to do what we do. You saw us on Saturday playing tempo. We play huddle. We huddle speed break. We do. My thing is, like, I want to dictate the pace of the game. I don't care if we got to go fast or slow. To me, when you go fast all the time, then what is the defense going to practice all week? You going fast all the time. Mm-hmm. What's tough is when you go fast, then you go slow, then you go fast, then you huddle, then you break fast, then you break slow. Like, creating that pace, to me, is more important than just going fast or going slow all the time.
Fascinating. You know, you'll see coaches or even parents will try to put our kids into some positions where we go, let's see how they react. Let's see how they do. You know, I'm watching my kid swim and I'm going, let's see how she reacts to getting in deep water here. But do you do that with a play call ever? Do you go, all right, I want to see my QB. I think I'm going to get this look. Can you afford in a game to go, let's see how Dante reacts to this. Let's see if he sees what I think he's going to see.
I do that in practice. I do that in spring ball, fall camp, winter walks, summer walks. That's when I put him in the most difficult situation that we can. And then when you get to the game, like I mentioned earlier, I mean, majority of the time, those situations don't even come up.
Right.
But you want to prepare them in the practice setting rather than a game. I'd rather not put him in that in a game.
Yeah.
But like I mentioned, you know, every play's got to play within itself. Like, you might have four verticals called, but what if they bring everybody?
Mm.
How do you get out of that? What are your checks and balances to create either a get back to the line of scrimmage, a positive gain, or explosive? Like, that's the whole goal, is limiting negative plays. So that's why I think we've been so efficient, because our guys know how to get a shitty, or excuse me, I was going to say shitty play call, a bad play call. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Into a positive. And positive doesn't just mean touchdowns. It means like, hey, second and five is good, you know? Second and seven is good. Second and eight is better than second and 12.
Right.
So that's what I try to get our guys, their mindset. And doing that in practice, doing that, you know, earlier in camps and winter walks, that's when we get all those problems. So then when we get on the field, it's like clockwork. We can get into the better play.
You played a lot of guys. I think you had 10 or 12 rushers. You had 10 or 12 receivers. It was fun to see a lot of that depth out there on the field. Did you get enough in that week one game, enough of seeing your ones play to, you know, did you feel like you got enough of a look at them?
I did. You know, Dante came out, I think fourth quarter, he didn't play that. I think he played maybe till 3 minutes left in the third. Austin got some quality reps, and I needed to get Austin, Luke, and Brock out there just to make sure that they have some game reps. I mean, last year we were battling our butts off just to finish the game in week one, so it was good for me to see other guys play. Our offensive line got a lot of quality work. You know, our last scrimmage really pushed our guys to play like a game, to get, you know, 60-plus snaps, so I feel like I got enough guys out there and enough work from our first team, and, you know, even second guys that were giving us quality depth and quality reps. So I feel good about it.
I have this recurring nightmare that, you know, either I'm on air and there's dead air, or I've written a column and it appears blank when people go to read it. As a coordinator, what's your nightmare situation or scenario? Do you lose the game plan on the way to the game, or you have to call a play and you don't have your stuff in front of you? What's the recurring nightmare that you might have?
I would say calling something off the cuff that you had a plan for, and you just disregarded the plan.
Mm.
You know, that's something that I vowed after UW 23 on the road.
Yeah.
You know, we had a fourth down and two or three call, and I think it was fourth and two or three. And I didn't call it. I called a play that I liked, but it wasn't something that I had prepped for all week to call in that specific situation. So that's what keeps me up at night, is those calls and the gut calls a lot of times as a play caller. Like, there's some gut calls, but then there's just, hey, this is what we practice. This is what our guys know. This is what we liked on Wednesday night as a staff when we're all calm, cool, collected. Like, call the play, you know?
Yeah.
And when you don't do that, sometimes it does work. You're right, 'cause, you know, oh man, that was a great call. It was out, you know, off the cuff, but like majority of the time those don't work. So that keeps me up at night a lot, you know.
Yeah, because you get
eight from the eight.
It's like
fourth and eight from the eight keeps me up, you know, like
yeah.
And goal plays, those kind of keep me up. First play of the game last week, you know, I was like, all right, what could happen if they do this, if they do that? That stuff keeps me up. And, you know, we didn't get what I thought, but there's a lot of things that keeps me up. But I know that preparation, practice, the amount of time that we put in as coaches and players is just, it's really kind of crazy how much time goes into this. And then you gotta call it like you planned, in the calm, cool collectness of a offensive staffer, the Bill Walsh way, you know. You try to do stuff on the field in the heat of the moment. That's when emotions are high. That's when thoughts are not clear as much. You have to remain poised and call what you practiced.
I had a chance. I was covering the NFL in 2000. I was covering the Niners, and I got a chance to spend time with Walsh because he was there as a consultant. And I often, you know, he wasn't doing a lot during the day. He had an office, and I sat with him a few times and just talked. And he was just so smart about everything, like the organization of your time, structure of practice. He had thought things through. Is he an influence on you, or what coaches do you kind of look back and think about as I bring that up?
I think, you know, I've obviously was really young when he was still coaching. So, but his influence on the game as a whole, and like you said, his strategy, the way that he developed a team, drafted a team, called an offense, the rhythm of the plays, making everything look the same, yet, you know, running different plays off different looks, you know, the West Coast offense. Yeah. I played in this system in college under a guy named Sean Watson. It wasn't exact same verbiage. He kind of changed the verbiage, but the structure, the play calls were all the same. So that had a big influence on me. But yeah, I mean, I've had a great coach my whole life. I played at Trinity High School in Louisville, Kentucky under Bob Beatty. And he won, I think, 15 state titles at Trinity. And my offensive coordinator there, Andrew Coverdale, still a huge influence to me. I played for Steve Kragthorpe, late great Steve Kragthorpe, who passed away 2 years ago, unfortunately. And he's the one that brought me on as a walk-on and started me as a walk-on at Louisville. And then Charlie Strong, I worked under Bobby Petrino, Tom Herman, Hank Carter at Lake Travis, Jeff Traylor at UTSA, now Dan. So I've been really fortunate to be around some phenomenal head coaches that are very structured, organized, disciplined, creative, and winners. And that's, to me, been huge for me in my development as a coach.
You grow up in Louisville. I've been to Churchill Downs for a derby. It's awesome. Great experience. I also went to the Waverly Hills Sanatorium because people told me it was haunted and they were giving tours at night. And it was, you know, It's where everybody had tuberculosis, I guess, you know. And you ever been to that place? You ever been there at night?
You know, I don't know if I ever went there. No, I'm good on tuberculosis or getting
seeing ghosts.
Out of my pants. Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm good. I'll go to Churchill Downs. I'll do the Bourbon Trail. I'll go play some great golf and see my family and friends all in Louisville. But the tuberculosis spot is not on my list.
It wasn't on mine either, but I got sucked into it. And then you're there at night and it's pitch black and they give you flashlights and they're like, you know, this is the room where, and I'm like, I got to get out of here. Like, this is not my thing either. Will Stein, Oregon offensive coordinator, is with us. All right. I asked you last time we talked about Sissy Cakes, your mom's business. I want to plug it again. Right. What's going on with Sissy Cakes? What's the latest?
They're just balling out of control. I mean, they send cakes all over the damn world. So my mom is actually, she'll be in town tonight for the game this weekend. Oh, nice. And I will have an orange juice cake. I'm sure I'll have a chocolate chip cake. I'll have it all. It's, you can't get anything better. So
what was the start? What's the origin of that? Sissycakes.com. But what's the origin of that business?
So my mom's been baking cakes with my aunt for years, and she always did my birthday cake. She's a phenomenal baker. And then she was making the orange juice cake, which was famous in my family. My mom got the recipe when she was younger from my dad's side. And basically COVID hit. My mom was a teacher. My aunt was fitness instructor. And they kind of just at home. And, hey, people were wanting the cake still. And they just said, hey, why don't we just start a business? Because everybody would ask for the orange juice cake on, you know, special occasions.
Sure.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, and my mom would make, you know, probably 30 or 40 of them. And then it just became, hey, why don't we just make these? Because everybody loves them. And they've just been killing it ever since. And it's really cool.
I'm going to reach
really
out. I'm going to get your mom on the show. I'm going to get your mom on the show. We're gonna do a whole thing on cakes and the origin of that. It's like one of these stories you see on Shark Tank. Like, you know, it's just.
I know. I've told them to go on Shark Tank. I told them to do that. We got to get them on there. Like, come on.
Does she need it, though?
Where these guys are.
Does she need it? It seems like it's sailing.
I mean, it is, but I mean, can't we get, I mean, let's explode. Let's get worldwide.
Never enough.
Let's get Kevin. Let's get all those guys buying in.
Never enough. Offensive coordinator mindset right there, Will Stein. All right. What do you see on film? You know, you look at Oklahoma State.
What I see, I mean, there's a lot of new guys, a lot of new faces. Todd Grantham was a defensive coordinator at Louisville in 14 when I was my last year coaching there, my second year coaching with Coach Petrino. I mean, I know he's aggressive. I know he's been coaching a long time. Phenomenal defensive coordinator, been in a lot of spots, been in the NFL, been in the Saban tree. So he's going to have them ready, and I'm expecting any and all types of looks for us. So it'll be a good challenge. You know, obviously Mike Gundy's won a ton, so that guy knows what he's doing, and You know, when I was at Texas, we'd always play Oklahoma State, obviously. And it was just, I mean, they were always really tough. Played them in Stillwater, played them at, in Austin, and just a really good football team. You know, they obviously are an air raid offense, going to air the ball out, play fast, high tempo. So, you know, if they're going to play that fast, we might have more possessions on offense, which is good. But, yeah, I mean, I got a ton of respect for them and what he's done there over his career. And, you know, I have a bunch of hungry kids coming in here that want to beat the Ducks. So it's our job to you know, get off to a good start like we did last week and be able to run the football. And we got our opportunities to throw the ball down the field. We got to hit them.
I've never been to a game in Stillwater. What's that like?
Rowdy. Yeah, the fans are right on top of you. Stadium is probably slightly smaller than Autzen, but the sidelines are super tight. I mean, the fans are literally right behind your bench, and they have these paddles that they pound on the on the side of the stadium, you know, like on the wall. And good fans, passionate fans. Again, like long tradition of winning, especially in the Big 12. And you know, Coach Dunny's done a great job there.
All right, Will Stein, I appreciate you. For anybody who wants a cake, sissycakes.com, and we'll catch up with you down the road. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Appreciate it, man.
All right, take care. There he goes, Will Stein, offensive coordinator and cake promoter on this show. His mom, we got to get his mom on the show. I went to the website as he was talking there and hungry for cake all of a sudden, but they do. They ship all over the world. And yes, when we had Will Stein on before, we talked about it. I want you to leave it here. There's so much more ahead, including a visit from Jimmy Rogers, Washington State coach. What is Jimmy Rogers thinking about as Washington State prepares for a game against San Diego State in Pullman on Saturday? It was a wild and weird start for the Jimmy Rogers era at Washington State. I had a first at johnconzano.com. On the Monday mailbag, I had a Washington State fan ask me if Jimmy Rogers is going to make it more than one season, given the way they played against Idaho. Idaho dominated Washington State at the line of scrimmage. Washington State won the game. That's the point. You win the game. You play to win. But they only had 3 rushing yards, and Idaho owned the line of scrimmage. It was troubling. I made my picks today at johnconzano.com. I'll talk about that coming up. My week 2 can't-miss 5-star predictions, plus Jimmy Rogers still ahead, and the 5 at 5. Leave it locked in.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, I am all locked in with my week 2 picks at johnconzano.com. If you want the picks, you can go there and check it out. But I want to break out just a couple of games that Steven and I have talked about a little bit earlier in the show. But a couple of games that I think are super interesting. You know, I want to start with a game I normally wouldn't talk about. The Iowa at Iowa State game, 9 a.m. Saturday on Fox. Do you know the story of the trophy in this rivalry game? Fantastic and fascinating history. The original trophy had a running back in that traditional stiff arm Heisman-like post, like sort of that pose that the Heisman Trophy has, like stiff arming. And it played that way for all the years. The trophy was fine. There was nothing wrong with the trophy. But then the Iowa Corn Growers Association, someone hatched a wonderful, terrible idea. They must have met over some corn chowder or corn on the cob, and They decided that their way to kind of get involved with this rivalry would be to offer to create a new trophy. So they huddled up and they commissioned an artist who came up with this trophy that depicted a farmer and his family, a bunch of small children, huddled around a bushel basket of corn. The president of the Corn Growers Association called it, quote unquote, a work of art. Everybody else hated it, including Iowa coach Hayden Fry, who publicly said, "I like corn. I think it's great, but I don't really get the relationship to a football game." So newspaper columnists ridiculed it. Radio shows in Iowa made fun of it and criticized it. The players hated it. The coaches hated it. The Iowa Corn Growers Association feelings must have been really hurt over this, because they were like, hey, we're going to put some money into this thing. We're going to come up with a new trophy. But they very quickly sort of everyone huddled up and said, we need a new trophy. This thing sucks. And so they spent another year. This is in 2011, 2012. They spent another year coming up with the new and improved Cy-Hawk trophy. Cyclones, Hawkeyes, Cy-Hawk. So the trophy features both mascots of the universities, a football, and then corn in corn in the background. You can just feel like if you have kids, you know what happened here. They were like, okay, how do we keep the corn growers happy? All right, how do we keep the football people happy? Put a football in there, okay. How do we make it about the universities? Everyone seems to accept this. Game on Saturday. I just had to tell that story. Saturday morning on Fox, that'll be the big game. Iowa State is at home. I don't know if you've seen their kicker, Kyle Conrady. He kicked a 63-yard field goal last week. They beat South Dakota 55-7. I think this is going to be a close game. Iowa State's favored by 3.5. These teams just play that way. The last seven games between these teams have been decided by 10 points or less. That's a real rivalry. Iowa State's favored by 3.5. I think they're going to cover it. I have it 27-21, Iowa State beating Iowa. Game that Steven and I talked about in hour one, Fresno State at Oregon State. I'm just going to say this. I don't trust Oregon State. Not after watching the Beavers look so unprepared and sloppy against Cal in that opener. I am reluctantly picking Oregon State, but it's one of these games. I don't know if you've ever picked a game and you've gone, I don't know. Like, there's some games where I know and I go, oh, this is a sure thing. This is a lock. But Oregon State's in a must-win situation. This is an early must-win, week two must-win, because Oregon State has Texas Tech and Oregon. If you're not 1-1, you're 0-4. All right. And we talked to Trent Bray on the show yesterday. He said he pored over the game field on Sunday. He saw a bunch of areas to improve. But the thing that jumped out to me the most was when he said, I thought the substitution part was not great. He said he talked to his staff about it. It needs to be airtight. They had substitution issues on both sides of the ball and on special teams. They weren't prepared. And that's on the head coach. Trent Bray's got to be better. Oregon State's a 3-point favorite in this game. I'm going to pick them to win and cover. Am I going to be a sucker for doing that? We spent a lot of time on Oklahoma State and Oregon this week. Mike Gundy. You should have just flown under the radar. There's an old saying, let a sleeping dog lie. Mike Gundy didn't do that. He didn't let Oregon lull itself to sleep. Instead, he poked at the Ducks and he prodded at the Ducks. And I suspect because of that, he's going to have their full attention. You just heard Will Stein, the Oregon offensive coordinator. You know, he sort of talked about what he sees from Oklahoma State, but I've seen this a couple times before. Last time I really saw this was the Colorado game at Oregon a couple seasons ago. This is not going to go well for the Cowboys. Oregon is too good, too deep, too healthy, playing at home. You know, Gundy wasn't wrong. Resources matter. But he probably should have waited until after this game to make a deal about it. Oregon's a 28.5-point favorite. I think they're going to cover that. I think they're going to put up a 50-burger on Oklahoma State. We'll see what happens there. Other games that are jumping out at me and just performances that are jumping out at me. Michigan's at Oklahoma Saturday on ABC. I think Oklahoma is going to have a real nice season. I think they're a contender for the playoff. And I think John Mateer is going to be a Heisman candidate. He's every bit and every bit of talent, every bit of will to be a finalist. Evidence all over the place with John Mateer. And, you know, I think he'll have a real big game against Michigan. It'll kind of be the game where everybody else in America will finally go, oh, John Mateer can really play, and you've known it for a while. That one is interesting. Another game that's interesting is USC. USC's got Georgia Southern at home, and USC's a 28.5-point favorite. And last week we saw Lincoln Riley run the score up 73-13 over Missouri State. 73-13. You don't do 73-13 unless you're Lincoln Riley and you're going, hey, I want to shut everybody up. I'm tired of people talking about my job. Georgia Southern got beat by Fresno State 42-14. I don't think Fresno State is that good. And so I'm looking over at USC and Lincoln Riley, and I'm going, this is equally ugly. I have it 53-10, but it could be worse. I think USC is going to cover. Other games that jump out at me, of course, our next guest coming up, Jimmy Rogers. He's the coach at Washington State. This is the 7:15 p.m. game on the CW on Saturday night. But I mentioned this earlier in the week. San Diego State's at Washington State. Fresno State's at Oregon State. Is the Pac-2 bringing Boise State and those other schools up to them, or is the Pac-2 being relegated? Are they moving down? That is a question that I think in part will be answered by the performances on Saturday in Pullman and Corvallis. Washington State and Oregon State, go prove that you are the better programs. Go prove that you have more resources. Go prove that you're the Pac-2 and they're not. These are the kinds of games that I think teams that are good teams go out and win. And so I am kind of interested to see what Oregon State and Washington State will do. I'm picking San Diego State, but it's more of a, gosh, did you see Jimmy Rogers in Washington State, their inability to run the football last week? They can't run the ball against Sean Lewis and San Diego State. They're going to be in trouble there. So we'll talk to Rogers coming up. I want to know kind of his mindset. He's got like 75 new players on the roster at Washington State. He's taking, you know, a system that was built for the air raid a year ago, and now he's trying to morph it into ground and pound and be physical, but he doesn't have the guys for that. It's just, this is like watching the right tackle try to do ballet. Or this is like going to the Nutcracker and telling the ballerinas, you know, come play defensive tackle. You're asking, I think, a little bit too much of some of these players that are being put in these positions. But we shall see. You want my full picks? Go to johnconzano.com. Coming up top of the hour, 5 o'clock, we will do the 5 at 5. We've got a shortened show today. I'll tell you more on that later in the program as well. But Jimmy Rogers, the Washington State coach, is going to be next. You heard from Will Stein. God, if we get the guests. We had Trent Bray on the show earlier in the week. We had Bruce Barnum. Next week, Sean Lewis, San Diego State coach, along with Trent Bray, Dan Lanning. We'll always try to get the big guests. If you want to help book the show, you play producer, you can do that. Follow me on Twitter, at John Canzano BFT, or on Instagram. I'm on the gram, at John Canzano. Or go to the Bald Faced Truth Facebook page. Send us a note. Tell us, hey, who you want to hear on the show? You want your team's coach on the show? We'll try to meet those requests within reason. But I always love chasing new guests and trying to get new people on the show because I just think it's interesting and it's relevant. And, you know, it's why over the years. And by the way, we don't always stick to sports here. I don't know if you've noticed that. We've had comedians like Norm MacDonald and John Lovitz and Roseanne Barr on the program. We had the former White House press secretary, Tony Snow, on the show one time. President Obama joined us on the show, as people know. So there's we'll paint outside the lines. All right, leave it here. Jimmy Rogers, Washington State coach, is coming up. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. Appreciate all of you out there listening in Medford and Bend and Klamath Falls and Roseburg and Eugene and in Salem and Corvallis and Portland and in Southern Washington. Appreciate everybody who makes this show part of their day.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
It was not a great showing for Washington State out of the gates, but it was a win nonetheless. Coaches will tell you play to win the game. Jimmy Rogers is the new head coach at Washington State. He is 1-0, undefeated as the head coach there in Pullman. He's joining us now, fresh off the practice field. What is a Thursday practice like for you, Coach?
Yeah, Thursday's more, we call it a no-Thursday. It's tennis shoes, jerseys. None of it is physical. It's a full day more than anything else. Friday, we full speed, not necessarily contact, but it's helmets, it's cleats, and we're trying to get to top end speed. It's a little bit longer than Friday. Friday is just meant to try to get max capacity of speed and do things.
Is that, have you always tried to limit that contact on, you know, or is that just something you picked up more recently in recent years? Or because I know when you were in high school, you probably weren't getting that same look.
Yeah, high school is quite a bit different. I think Tuesday, Wednesday are our physical days during the week. It's also our biggest installs on Tuesday and Wednesday. So we try to press the guys and get them to play as if it's a game and put them in certain situations and have them physically be strained. And on Thursday, we try to taper back just to get their body back underneath them. And then Friday, it's no contact, but we try to go fast. It's honestly, it's like an Olympic prior to running the 100 sprints in the Olympics. They try to close to 90% of speed the day part of the game. And Thursday is really light. So got to be twitchy to play where it comes from.
Jimmy, there's so many variables in a game. You leave that game, that opener against Idaho, you get a chance to absorb the film. How much different did you feel about it after seeing the film versus maybe what you felt as you were leaving the field that night?
I just kind of live in the black and white. Was it good or was it not? And why was it? So I still, my feelings towards how we played offensively didn't change, but it wouldn't, it was just one particular player. Is when you play O line or you're a tight end, an extension of our O line, you can't have everybody take their turn making a mental error. And that's kind of what happened. And so it was a much worse product than what it would be just because you can't get people free and there's a little bit of lack of communication. And I think it was good to go through that adversity, but it just, we can't allow it, you know, to define who we are and consistently make the same mistakes, learn from our mistakes and grow and communicate on every snap and play free with a mindset, know what I'm doing, and I can play physically if I know what I'm doing. If I'm always thinking and always reactionary on offense, you know, the defense has the advantage. Defensively, I think everybody could see kind of how we play effort-wise. Most part of that game, it was really solid, but there's still plenty of things to up there, whether it be rush lanes to let a quarterback get out. Now, that quarterback was good. I don't care what level he plays at. He is fast. He made some of our guys miss in tight space as far as pass rush, but overall, just tackling space and grabbing cloth and running feet and the guy making the tackle, we needed him there. But that's why we run to the ball as hard as we run to the ball. Just first guy misses the tackle, the next guy's got to make it, and you can make a lot of and be successful and cover up a lot of error, the effort and physicality in which you play with on defense.
Jimmy Rogers with us, 1-0 as a head coach at Washington State. You guys struggled running the football, and you know, I know you probably left that film session thinking, okay, what do we need to fix there? What do you need to fix there?
Yeah, I think just some of it's from communication collectively, knowing the idea in the box and who we're going to and working in unison, and as well as like at the offensive position, like your footwork and your paddle need to be on at all times. That's got to be something that it has to shore up as we move forward. The better that we get, but also the better the competition gets, we got to make sure that we're not false stepping underneath ourselves. If our job is the, you know, a stunting three or whatever it be, a blitzing linebacker at depth, like we got to tracks and beat people to the point of contact and be physical. And if we miss on the block, we still got to strain through the finish. And those things did not show up. And times I feel like one mistake offensively, the next mistake, and those things can't happen. We got to do a better job adjusting, and we got to do a better job coaching through the game.
San Diego State, you look at them on film. You know, they had a tough season last year. First year coaches, I think, do in this era. Can we speak about that a little bit? I mean, I think we saw a little bit of that across the country last year with Brett Brennan in Arizona and Jonathan Smith at Michigan State and Jed Fish at Washington and even Trent Bray at Oregon State. That, you know, coming in, taking over a program, no excuses, but in this era, it feels more challenging with the portal and the turnover. Can you maybe speak to that a little bit of the job of kind of getting everything locked in and settled down as a head coach and in that fire hydrant you know, you're trying to drink from?
Yeah, I think for one, it's getting to know your players' strengths and weaknesses against true competition, right? You could see it at practice some capacity, but it's not really the same as when the bullets are flying. And then there's the other part, let the players do the system. I don't care if they've been with you through a spring and a summer and a fall, like that's not really experienced reps, right? That's like, that's practice, and you hope that they're getting closer to what you want to be. They've been with you for less than a year, and not all freshmen play, right? So you're taking a player from a system, breaking old habits, and you're talking about communication and a new language in which they need to know. And for some of these players that you're taking into your program, they have might have heard that communication, but at the last stop, that communication meant something different to them. And so there is a bit of breaking old habits and new verbiage and make sure that people understand what their job is. And I can't speak to this because our staff stuck there. I brought them with me. But I do think when you hire from outside and you always are replenishing, take another job and coaches hire a bunch of people that they haven't worked with, I think that part takes time to get the same page as far as what your expectations are. And when you say something as far as a route or a blocking scheme, and then inside of that play, how was he and what was your true understanding of that concept to another coach? Like, they may have past experiences, did things slightly different, and you don't know those issues because there's so much information that you're going to teach and get through to the players until the actual issue occurs, to where now it's kind of gray, right? I speak to the staff all the time as far, eliminate the gray area. This is what they're taught and this is what they do, and we'll adjust as things go, and we got to be able to respond. But I do want them living in the gray area on what is said to a player. You can't be coaching all the one-offs like, oh, yeah, on this, this is what you do to this. It's like, what is the rule? Is it cemented into their brain? And then when these occur inside the game, you can say, apply your rules, follow rules. Like, but if you're always teaching the play, not the actual action of what you're trying to get done, it's great to the kid. And he plays slow and he's constantly timid, and they don't play as fast as what they they've God given it, allows them to be.
It's a great, great coaching point. Jimmy Rogers with us. The flow of a game from a defensive standpoint, as you're up against a play caller, you're obviously thinking situationally, play by play, trying to win that play, put another team in a bad spot. But then the adjustments that you're talking about that happen within the play themselves, as the offenses are making, they get to the line of scrimmage, they look at the defense, you see it, you know, they start to make their adjustments and their checks. What can you do from a defensive standpoint to kind of adjust to the adjustment? And can you do that early in a season with a new system and new guys and that gray area you talk about?
Yeah, I think there's got to be, for one, defensively, there has to be a high level of knowledge of for what you're asking them to do, regardless if it's the call that's called in or you're switching the call. They need to know where they find, they need to know what they say immediate, because you're talking about defense checking the play. You have about 3 seconds to respond if you're checking your own, and then a lot of communication that has to be had across the board. And so a lot of what we do, we try to change the pre-snap call the single all the time to offenses. Just, you know, it may look like one high, it may look like two high, it may look like cover four, it may look like we're pressing. And half the time in which people are checking into things, they're checking into something that we're showing them that we're not even running. And so we need to make sure that we're able to adjust and be able to play the play in our baseballs a lot of the times. Now we will make adjustments, and we check defenses at the line of scrimmage when offenses check. But at the time, that comes with a certain heightened sense of urgency to communicate all the way across the board. If you're checking in from a man, everybody needs to know who they're covering immediately. Otherwise, you're going to give up the big. And I would say the same thing with, if you're in a man concept and you're going to a zone concept, everybody needs to know what their zone is so that, you know, there isn't just a vacant because somebody's playing man that shouldn't be. There's got to be conversation in between pre-snap, post-snap, and in between the snap on the next play, that you're talking on every single play, because kind of how you solve a lot of the issues. Wrong or right, we're going to play one defense together. That's what I tell the players. Like, doesn't necessarily matter that it's the perfect check. It matters that you are playing one thing collectively together.
The idea that, you know, your job is to win football games. Part of your job is to win football games. Winning ugly, winning pretty, does that matter to you?
It all matters to me. This will be sick to some people, but I don't judge off of, like, my career is based off wins and losses. I'm aware of that, but I've been a part of games where you play poorly and you win a game. Mm. I've been part of games that we've played great and we've lost. And at the end of the day, you only can control what you can control. And I would rather have a level of consistency of playing great and living with the circumstances of losing, rather than if we play awful and squeak ones out. We kind of take for granted all the errors happened because we won. Mm. Because the generation of kid that we're living with, as long as the result is the result, it's as if it's okay. But the reality is they're going to suffer more later on if they don't change their habits and focus of their actions. Like, it has to change, otherwise a better team will just beat you.
How'd you feel on week one? Was it a, we played all right and won, or was it we played great and won?
Oh, we didn't play great. No, yeah, we didn't play great. We didn't really play great in any facet. But I would say the thing I was pleased with was just with a lot of new people,
yeah,
and a lot of new personalities and emotions on a team. Nobody had the knees or felt bad for themselves, or, you know, more than anything, they didn't point the finger. And that's what I was really proud of our defense about, as far as the positions that they got put in. And then the response for our offense to respond when really nothing was working and having the success that we were expecting or thought that we would have, to be able to go out and just forget everything that had happened and execute a 2-minute drive. Regardless if it's a, you know, lower level team, I just came from the lower level. And I think if you are good, you're good. Like, a lot of players that we brought with us are good players, and they're going to be good players at this level as well. So the response, because the attitude was good. I think if your attitude is right and your mindset is right, you have the opportunity to own things. If you get into your feelings and you bitch and complain about what isn't working and you point the finger that it's always somebody else's fault, I think that's where you have zero shot, regardless of the adjustments that you make.
Jimmy Rogers, I appreciate you. Good luck in this weekend, and I'll catch you down the road.
Appreciate it. Thanks for it.
You bet. There he goes, Jimmy Rogers, Washington State coach. 1-0, lightning in a bottle. He's got Sean Lewis and San Diego State on Saturday night. Next week on the program, Sean Lewis, San Diego State head coach, will be joining us. I love that we're getting to talk to these coaches. I love that, you know, we get to know them a little bit. You can get a feel for what Jimmy Rogers is about just hearing that interview, the intensity and the expectations, most of all. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Well, great interviews this show. We had Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver, star of their offense, on the program in hour one. Hour two was loaded. Jimmy Rogers, Washington State coach. Will Stein, Oregon State's offensive coordinator. Steven, you have a favorite interview on today's show?
I thought Will Stein was the most interesting of them all. Just kind of hearing what his thought process is going through, what he does with Dante Moore, all the way back to his, his coaching history, who he's been with, who he's played with, who he's coached for. I probably think Will Stein was the most interesting of all three, but not saying that they're, not the other ones are bad, just Will Stein was a little more intriguing.
We talked to Trent Bray and Jimmy Rogers. I find some similarities in their style and their personality. They kind of want to do the same thing. I'd like to see their football teams have fun on Saturday. Want to see them go out and have some fun. Let's see how they do. We got the 5 at 5 coming up. We're going to have a short segment here as we get right into NFL football.
Cowboys-Eagles right here on 750 The Game. But let's start with the 5 at 5, Stephen.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Well, John, you touched on it a little bit, but there's going to be major changes to the transfer portal in college football after the NCAA FBS Oversight Committee voted today to move to a January transfer window and eliminate the spring window. So the proposed loan transfer window would be a 10-day period that opens up on January 2nd, which is one day after the college football playoff quarterfinals are completed. Now, the D1 Administrative Committee must approve the legislative changes before it can take effect. That vote is expected to occur before October 1st. And the committee is also proposing to make the entire month of December of recruiting a dead period, which means coaches can still be able to have contact with recruits, but would not be permitted to have on or off campus recruiting visits or evaluations. This season, the CFP playoffs will be held January 9th through the 10th. So the portal would actually be open during the semifinals and the national championship game. But most coaches, I think, agree the spring window can go away for the portal. I actually think this would be better for the, you know, for the teams and the coaches, not necessarily the players. And with the elimination of that, there is some rumors saying that legal challenges could be coming from the players for restricting the transfer movement of athletes.
Oh, this is going to end with the players organizing, unionizing, and trying to find a voice, because that's long what's been lacking in college athletics. But, you know, I think the coaches and the programs are trying to get this thing back on the rail. We'll see if they can get there.
Number 2.
Well, North Carolina got absolutely just crushed by TCU in week 1. And now there's reports coming out, John, that it's not all roses and everything coming out of North Carolina.
What do you mean?
I will say this. North Carolina and Bill Belichick have banned the New England Patriots staff from accessing the Tar Heels program. Of course, Belichick has brought a lot of Patriots guys with him. He was with the Patriots forever. He is not letting the Patriots have access to anybody at the program. When reached out by ESPN about this, UNC's general manager Michael Lombardi just said, "Good luck," then hung up the phone. And then North Carolina declined to comment. Now, two other NFL scouts have said that under Belichick's leadership, limited access to all NFL personnel, clubs are allowed to speak with their pro liaison, Francis Jourdain. And UNC's college relations website says that scouts will have zero access to coaches or other personnel people. The scouts say that the term zero access appears 3 times on their UNC's college relations website, which is only accessible by NFL personnel. Doesn't seem like a great look if you're trying to, you know, get used to the college football game and you're trying to recruit guys and say, hey, we'll get to the NFL, but then not allowing NFL people to access you. Seems like a weird weird thing that Belichick's doing here.
Yeah, it's a strange move. Also, it's amplified and framed by the idea that they didn't play very well in their opening game. So it becomes bigger, a bigger story, and it looks like they're thin-skinned and paranoid and that they have their eye off the ball, and that will continue until he wins football games. Moving on.
Number 3.
Well, one of the best to ever do it is Amari Cooper, and he has called it a career as he decided to retire today. 5-time Pro Bowl selection. He had just signed with the Raiders on August 26th. He signed a 1-year deal with the Las Vegas Raiders, said you know, he was drafted by the Raiders. So it was a full circle moment, but he has decided to hang it up and retire. Now, Chip Kelly, the offensive coordinator, said it's unfortunate because I think he's a heck of a football player, but he knows in his heart what he wants to do, so I wish him the best. Now, GM John Spytek said that he was anticipating Cooper having a big part in Sunday's game plan against the Patriots, but that looks like it will not be happening. 711 catches, over 10,000 yards, 60 touchdowns for Amari Cooper. Maybe Hall of Famer, I don't know, but he's a really good player.
I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's a really good player, but I also think it's weird what he did here, because he signed and then decided, you know, no, I don't want to be with this team. It's a weird movement by Cooper and you know, obviously Chip Kelly with one less playmaker in his lineup.
Number 4.
Well, we've talked about the NFL Red Zone having commercials throughout their product and everyone blaming ESPN. Well, ESPN saw all the complaints, and they decided to tell Adam Schefter to clarify these complaints and commercials that will be happening on Red Zone. course, Adam Schefter works for ESPN. Adam Schefter put out a tweet today. He just said, some added clarity. NFL Red Zone is 7 hours. That's 420 minutes. Over that time, viewers will be served 1 to 2 total minutes of ads in 15-second increments. This comes out to anywhere between 0.25 and 0.5% of total time, considerably less than other sports entertainment programs. It seems like they just said, hey, Adam, go put out a tweet that says it's press not release. That bad. Yes.
Press release.
I hate it. And ESPN is ruining NFL Red Zone and the NFL and all together. They're going to ruin everything.
I love TV. I hate TV. I mean, I love watching football games, and I love that we have access to games. I hate that television has taken over and is trying to control all this stuff, and it's not great. Not all of it's good.
Number 5.
Well, speaking of games, we do have a NFL Week 1 game, John. Cowboys at the Eagles. You can hear it right here if you're in Portland on 750 The Game. Eagles right now, the defending Super Bowl champions, 8.5-point favorites over the Dallas Cowboys. Who you got? I think I'm kind of leaning Cowboys plus 8.5. I mean, why not? Nobody's on the Cowboys right now.
Cowboys and 8.5, sure. Go with it. I mean, I don't know. We don't know. Just like week one in college football. Who's good? Who's not good? I know that the Eagles return a whole bunch of good players, but these opening games are weird and squirrely, and the Cowboys have been distracted in the offseason. No Micah Parsons. How much will that play a role in it? But, you know, we've got NFL football starting, and then a full week of games. Full weekend of games coming up on the weekend.
And if you'd like to watch it and not just listen to it, it will be on NBC and Peacock as well. So you not just Peacock, it'll be on NBC. You can be able to watch it there.
I think we've passed the point of people maybe wanting to, seeing that as a novelty, being, in a streaming service or whatever, NBC and Peacock. But games coming up this weekend, Friday night game, Kansas City Chiefs playing the Chargers. And then moving into Sunday, is there a game that's got your attention on Sunday? I mean, Aaron Rodgers going back and playing against the Jets is kind of interesting. Pittsburgh Jets, Niners, Seahawks on Sunday on Fox. Any game in particular that has your attention, Stephen?
Lions, Packers. That one is going to be a 1:25 kickoff here on the West
CBS.
Coast. Yeah, Lions going to Lambeau Field on the Packers. I don't know if Micah Parsons is playing. I don't know, but Jordan Love, I'm in love with him and this team for the Packers this season. I want to see what they can do against the Lions, who got Aiden Hutchinson back, and he should be healthy enough. That division's awesome, John. The NFC North is just incredible with the Packers, Lions, Vikings, and Bears. So I want to watch that one. I can't wait to see that one.
Well, that will all start. The NFL will all start with the game tonight. And then, of course, we have the college games coming up this weekend. Tomorrow we'll be all over this on this radio show as we have the BFT jury coming along tomorrow, plus Stu Jackson, the WCC commissioner. They've made an addition to their conference, UC San Diego coming into their conference, WCC trying to backfill as they were expecting to have Grand Canyon. They're not going to have Grand Canyon as they've moved on to the Mountain West. Maybe they're playing a little defense, too, with St. Mary's. We'll find out. Do they know? Do they anticipate that possibly St. Mary's could be on the move to the Pac-12? We shall see on tomorrow's show. Stu Jackson will be with us. I want to thank everybody who made this show part of their day, including Jimmy Rogers, Washington State coach. He was fantastic talking about their upcoming game. If you missed the podcast of that, grab it wherever you get a podcast. We got a visit from Will Stein, Oregon's offensive coordinator. That gives us Will Stein, Dan Lanning, Tosh Lapoy. Consecutive week after week, the last 3 weeks. So good guests on the Oregon Ducks front. That podcast with Will Stein available as well, wherever you get podcasts. And then, of course, Trent Walker, the Oregon State wide receiver, who was humble as part of our weekly Oregon State interview. He was humble and forthcoming talking about their loss. We'll see if Oregon State can right the ship. We'll see what happens with Oregon. But we still have a radio show tomorrow where we'll preview it all. All right, grab a podcast wherever you get a podcast, and I appreciate everybody who made this show part of their day.